Hello and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
And I'm Andy Rao.
Andy, I'm now doing my second trip to the Dungeon Crawler Carl series, which I know you tried and bounced off of extremely hard, which is...
I did.
Totally fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the first time I read them, I have not read the most recent book, so I read them all, and then I decided as kind of preparation for reading this, the most recent one, I'm just going to go back and do them again. But I tried. I'm doing the audiobook this time. The narrator is really, really good, and I disagree strongly with a couple of the choices he's made. Basically, the two main characters who are like on screen for like the entire entire book. Yeah, but I mean, it's good. It's growing on me a little bit, and that I'm now tolerating it as like this is just what it is. But I'm enjoying it again. I understand why people do not. Might not connect with it, but it is it's a super fun book. I was trying to explain it to a coworker yesterday. I was like, no one's going to be reading this book in 100 years, right? It's not like, greatest literature of all time or anything like that, but it is very fun.
Yeah. So, although, yeah. You should be careful of predictions like that, because some of the stuff we read today was not considered like great stuff at the time of its publication, right?
Yeah.
Like Dickens and stuff like that. And then, but it's simple, compelling popularity has made it stick around. Like, I think this way about like Stephen King, for example. Like, you're never going to read a Stephen King and be like, what a literary masterpiece that was.
Yeah.
However, it's like just really compelling. And I do think in 100 years we'll be reading it because people will not be able to stop reading it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I've never thought about that. Yeah. I kind of wonder if like, if like D&D will be played in 100 years for the same reason, where it's like, well, there's just something there. Like, we'll just kind of keep playing that game, even though I'm sure the hobby will have evolved quite a bit in the next 100 years.
Now, my limited foray into the Dungeon Crawler Carl books suggested to me, is there like a huge amount of lore behind this? Like, is there a giant fan wiki that's many layers deep of lore and background stuff?
I am sure there is. The thing that is not clear to me, and I have not dug into this at all, so forgive me, Denimen fans, but I don't fully get the sense that this was like I think he had like thought through a lot of stuff, but I don't know if he had like everything mapped out necessarily right from the beginning.
Yeah.
Right. Like maybe he did. Maybe he had like this grandmaster plan, like there's going to be 10 books and this is what's going to happen in each book or whatever. But I get a sense a little bit that it's like the plot sort of like, as he needs stuff gets added to it. Mm-hmm. Which is not to say that it's bad. I think it's quite fun. Like I mentioned, yeah, quite fun. And I'm sure the wiki is very exhaustive. I know there are people that like have their own beloved characters that aren't like the main characters too in it. But yeah, it's fun. I mean, there is a tabletop game that is coming out. I think they just premiered it at Gen Con like a week ago as we're recording this or so.
Okay.
And a former, coworker friend of mine, he said he played it and it's actually very fun and kind of gets pretty close to the feel of what the books give you as well. Yeah. So if you're thinking about it from like a tabletop design perspective, like there's some really fun set pieces in that book. And I think that's where it excels very well is like, hey, here's this crazy situation. How are, our main characters going to get out of it? Like, how are the players going to get out of this situation intact and alive? And like, that's most of the fun of the book is like, oh my goodness, how are they going to get out of this one? The stakes keep increasing as the books go on. Yeah.
I do think this feels like the modern equivalent of like a new Sherlock Holmes story appearing every week in the paper. Sort of thing, I'm always intrigued when a book is inspired by like a TTRPG, like Dungeons and Dragons usually, and then it ends up inspiring a TTRPG to be built to like capture the experience of the book, which is an attempt to capture the experience of D&D. So it's just fascinating, and that's not bad. There's nothing dumb about that. I just find it very intriguing. Like, so what mechanical elements make it to that third or fourth level of interpretation? That's just very interesting to me. So I have no real interest in the Dungeon Crawler Carl TTRPG, But I do have some interest in seeing, you know, like, so what is this game going to try and emulate, you mm-hmm. know, and can we trace it back to, like, you know, running D&D in the late 70s or something, right? Which is probably where Dungeon Crawl started. I don't know.
Yeah, it's that's interesting. I would be curious how the author would answer that question, because, like, I don't get the sense that there's, like, a need for him to be to, like, prove which edition is right. In it, right? I mean, like, he references both Pathfinder and Dungeons and Dragons, right, in the book, right? So it is very fun. Like, to your point, it's like, you know, it's this book that's nominally sort of like a fantasy series. It's almost like urban fantasy in that it's based on, you know, Earth at some point, this thing happens, then it becomes kind of a fantasy universe. But, like, you know, there's referencing stuff that happens kind of in our, like, contemporary time too, right? So it's like the main character, Carl, talks about, oh, this reminds me of a Pathfinder game I played, or, you know, this reminds me of playing D&D 20 years ago, you know?
Yeah.
While it's also like, you know, this is like kind of in his world, this is like a real thing that's happening, but it feels like a game. Like, it is very, like, intertwined. And I think that, to me, is the most fascinating part about, like, the fact that this book has caught hold. And, like, I see, like, normal looking people, like, reading it, you know, out and about in the world. It's that, like, it is so coded as, like, a gamer book, right? Like, I mean, you know, if this came out 30 years ago when we were reading, you know, nerdy stuff, it would, like, it'd be like a Tor fantasy novel, right? You know, you'd have, like, a hand-painted cover, right? Like, you're looking, like, you know, fantasy art of, like, you know, Carl and his cat Princess Donut, you know, on the cover, like, fighting some beast or something like that. You know, it's just like it is crossed over enough that, like, I think it's just like, I don't know, like, I guess, like, the language of tabletop has crossed over into modern day.
Yeah.
You like vocabulary too, which is just, it's very fascinating. And it also feels a little bit like there's part of me that's like oh, hey, like, that's my world. Like, why, you know, like, why are the jocks invading the, you know, the D&D world? But I mean, I think it's just like, that's just part of culture now. Right.
Yeah.
It's just where we're at right now. Like, yeah.
By the way, I felt physical pain when you said he has some Pathfinder references, because I'm thinking, like, Pathfinder came out in what, like, 2008 or something? That was like just 2 or 3 years ago, right?
No,
like,
unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it is fascinating. And in any sort of niche hobby, you know, like, it's interesting when the mainstream gets a hold of pieces of it and it becomes popular. Like, it's just always interesting to identify what are the things that the mainstream thought were worthwhile from this niche, right?
Yeah.
Like, so you in the niche love all of it, but the mainstream loves 2 or 3 pieces of it. And what are those 2 or 3 pieces? That's an interesting and informative thing to think about, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, and, like, to be clear, I think Dinnaman's a giant nerd, right? He'd probably have a lot of fun, like, you know, coming on the podcast and stuff, like, you know,
yeah,
he's too big for it. But, like, I think I am curious, like, yeah, if you have someone who's maybe just, like, heard of D&D and is like, oh, I just want to read something on the airplane, like, I've been hearing about this series, like, I'll pick it up, like, what about that appeals to them? And my guess is it's a lot of the, like, you know, the human elements that are present in any tabletop game, right? Like, so you have some of those stuff that's, like, kind of transcends the mechanics. But I think also people just like the idea of, like, leveling up, right? Like, I do these series of actions, you know, I kill these monsters, and then I get to be better in some way. Like, that feels very, very clean. Like, that's a power fantasy that I think everybody shares of, like, oh, like, wouldn't it be nice if, like, you know, I did these actions and then became permanently better, you know?
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Like, that'd be a really fun, a fun thing. And I think that sort of power fantasy, I think, appeals broadly to everybody when it comes down to it.
So I got to ask, is there a Dungeon Crawler Carl TV show in the works?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
If there's not, like, someone must have optioned it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it has been optioned. I know nothing else about it other than that there is one coming. I mean, it is, right. I mean, I think he even started writing these serially, like, right. He has a Patreon that you can join and you can get access to chapters as they're coming out. I mean, the whole format of the book lends itself well, I think, too.
Yeah.
Yet having a TV show.
Like, I would love to learn that, like, what, 10 books in and it's a big bestseller. He's still releasing early chapters on Patreon. That would make me so happy to learn.
Yeah, so. I think he is. I mean, that's how I've got, I got most of my copies of the ebooks is by joining his Patreon. Right.
Hey, like, that's fantastic. All right.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're, he has some sort of set, I don't know. It's like getting into inside baseball about like publishing and stuff, but it's like, it is very interesting to see a success story like this. I don't think anyone should count on this sort of thing happening to them if you're writing your own, your own fantasy story. But I mean, you know, like by all accounts, he's very smart about community engagement and community building and stuff too. Right. So there's lots going for him, but I mean, you can join his Patreon and get updates about, you know, what his writing process is like. I mean, I do imagine like, you know, like what if you could get that from, I don't know, like, like what if, you know, Tolkien back in the day had a Patreon too? You know? It's like, I mean, it's just, it's a brave new world.
Yes, it really is. Yes. Amazing. So, hey, Chris, I have a topic for us to discuss today. I think we've touched on it in the past, but it kind of came and hit home for me this summer. So I thought I would toss it at you. And that question is, how do I get rid of all of my gaming stuff?
Oh, no.
So not in a dramatic way, like I'm leaving the hobby.
Yeah.
But just so a little bit of background. So about me, like gaming stuff has been, is pretty much my hobby. It's like where my hobby dollars go, right? Yeah. I don't have like yachts. I don't play golf, whatever. Yeah. Like, you know, my hobby dollars go into buying TTRPGs.
Yeah.
And this has been the case for most of my adult life. So, and combine that, here's another thing to learn about me. I don't really get rid of stuff.
Oh.
Right? Okay. So I'm not, I know people who like the second they're done watching a show or reading a book, they've sold it on Craigslist.
Yeah, yeah.
That is not me. So, for various reasons, I almost, game stuff is stuff I almost never get rid of. So what that means is I have a house full of game stuff.
Yeah.
Right. And over the years, it's like sometimes it's been board games that have been my interest. Sometimes it's been TTRPGs. Sometimes it's been war games and stuff, but I don't tend to get rid of it when I'm done with it. So it's all still here. And this summer had an experience that really made me start thinking about this in like an existential way.
Yeah.
This summer, my wife and I had the task of going to a relative's house and cleaning it out.
Yeah.
This was a relative. They had lived in a house in the Midwest for like 50 plus years. And they also never got rid of anything. They're not wealthy, so it's not full of like fancy, exciting stuff, but it is full of all of the stuff they accumulated. And that's like furniture, like a million, just like tchotchkes, I guess you might say, and just stuff accumulated. And I don't want to be dismissive about it at all, because that stuff and the keeping of it had held value to this relative. But coming in as a relative stranger to this and being assigned the task of like, okay, they're no longer living here and this house needs to get cleaned out. You need to preserve what's worth preserving and get rid of the rest. That turned out to be like a fairly overwhelming task.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And this is a house full of stuff. And here's where it kind of ties to my experience right now or my situation. This house was full of stuff that was not valuable. It's not full of like, they're not wealthy people and they lived within their means. So the accumulated stuff, there's a lot of stuff, but it doesn't have, no individual pieces worth more than like $45. Right. So, but there's a lot of it, and a lot of it has, it's there and it was acquired because it has emotional significance of some sort, or it's tied to a period of the lives of these people. So going in and saying like, we can at max preserve like 1% of the stuff that's in this house. and the rest of it we're going to pay somebody to come in and like donate or throw in a dumpster, mm-hmm. was a sobering experience for someone like me who is like a keeper of stuff, right?
Yeah.
So that was a big experience that I'm not going to go down. I'll try not to dwell on that too much. But I mean, I came back to my house thinking, I've got bookshelves of game stuff that I haven't gotten rid of. And I mean, I like to think of myself as middle-aged. You can mm-hmm.
I won't
argue about
that at all.
You can argue about that however you want, but
yeah.
I'm a little ways away from my kids having to come in with a dumpster and throw all this crap into a dumpster to be put in the garbage.
Yeah.
So how do I get from where I am now, which is I have too much game stuff, to a place where my kids are not having to come in and just shovel this like garbage, which it is not, into a dumpster? So I wanted to bring that up for a couple of reasons. One, because you are somebody who, I think from our interactions, I've gathered you are a little bit closer to the, like, I'm done with this, it's going on Craigslist personality type than mm-hmm. I am. I am the opposite of that.
Yeah.
I have stuff from junior high. I have game stuff from junior high, right? Yeah, it's all still here because I never got rid of it. Now, I've gotten better in the last 5 or so years. I am now pretty good at not like acquiring new stuff, right? I am pretty good at applying the like, what, here's this new shiny Kickstarter. Will I actually use this at the table? Yes or no? I now have a pretty good set of like filters in place to keep this collection from getting much bigger, but it's too big. And I don't want my kids in 30 years to be throwing it in a dumpster. So what do I do between now and that moment? So just general reactions from you to what I just said.
Yeah. I think the first thing I want to say is, like, I mean, it is great that you're thinking about this, right? Like, my wife and I are also sort of going through this with a relative that has passed recently, where it's just an overwhelming task to even like think about like how to deal with this stuff. So, for listeners, I will say that, like, you know, I've been to Andy's house. This is not like, you know, Andy isn't like, you know, drowning and stuff. Like, you know, everything is on shelves for the most part and things like that, right? This is not like Andy, you need professional help right now.
right.
Yeah, but it is interesting. I watched this YouTube video yesterday. There's this guy who, like, honestly, like, his YouTube channel I've seen every once in a while, and he's one of those guys who just sort of like reviews like little gadgets and tries to get you to buy them on Amazon. And for whatever reason, he posted this thing about like how he's been trying to get out of that trap. And like the question that he's been asking himself more recently when he wants to buy something is, what is the result that I want this thing to give me? Does that make sense? So, I mean, like, so the idea is, right, like, you know, if you're like, oh my goodness, I really need a brand new camera or a new game or something like that, like, to not just be like, oh, this is shiny, I want this, like, to ask yourself, like, what's the result that I'm trying to get here, right? Like, the result of buying a new game is probably what you want is, like, you're either like, oh, like, I want to learn some cool new mechanics that this game designer came up with, right? Like, this is the best way to do that. Or the result is, I really want to get together with these four friends that I haven't seen in a while. And like, this is the way that I feel like I can make that happen, right? Like, so like there's always sort of a reason why you're trying to buy something that's beyond just like the shiny thing, right? Like, and it could be very, the reason you might want something could be as simple as just like, I'm feeling sad and buying something might kind of break me out of that. I think that can be a valid reason too. Although, you know, urge you like maybe go to the dollar store instead of like Gucci or whatever, you know?
Right.
Like,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So I mean, like, I think that's like, that's a useful thing to sort of think about. And like, I am, you know, I'm getting better at like saying no to stuff. I think the thing that's made me more recently be open to that is just the fact that, like, if you really wanted any of those games again, for the most part, Noble Knight has 100 copies of it, right?
Yeah,
right. And like that's sort of what it comes down to. Like, if it turns out, like, you know, and you know, when you're dead and gone, and your kids are in their, you know, 40s or 50s or something like that, and like, oh man, remember, you know, Dad used to have this specific game that I remember playing with him. We loved playing Call of Cthulhu with him. I really want to track down the edition that we played together. around the dinner table or something like that. They can find that. It's going to cost them inflation adjusted $100 or whatever.
It'll cost them like $1 trillion.
Yeah. It'll cost them a trillion space bucks and they'll have to ship it from the moon or whatever. But it's all the stuff is still accessible. Right. But I think what you're grasping at is you have these memories associated with it too. Right.
Yeah.
So there's there are some core memories of that stuff that you have from junior high that those exist regardless if the thing is gone. Right. There's a minimalism book I read. I think it's called The Japanese Art of Minimalism. It's something like that. Right. But one of the concepts from that he really brought out, and I'll censor this a little bit. He's if this got covered in sewage, right? And I think you've actually had this happen in your life. Yeah, if some of this stuff got covered in sewage, right? Would you even bother washing it, or would you just get rid of it?
Yeah.
Right. And that can be another useful way of thinking about how much value is this really bringing me to store this stuff in my house versus just giving it to Noble Knight and then rebuying it later if I need it.
Yeah.
Right. Is is this specific version of this thing so valuable to me that I would, rescue it from a burning building? I would, clean it if it got, sewage on it. I would, really try to take care of it if something bad happened to it. Or is it really just if the monetary value of reselling it to Noble Knight is meaningless, it's zero, then why keep it? Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a hard thing. I think that's a hard leap to make, but I think you can kind of follow it logically,
Yeah.
Logically, that makes a lot of sense. Oh my goodness. If I'm not going to replace this thing and I can, if it got sewage on it, or I can rebuy it at Noble Knight for, $10, I don't need to store it in my house.
Yeah. I will say the great sewage event, flood event of 2019 or whatever hellish year it was.
Yeah,
it did take care of some of this problem. I no longer have the White Wolf collection that I did before that.
So yeah. There, I mean, there is something to that. I've had a couple of traumatic experiences around stuff. I had bed bugs 15 years ago or so, and that really made me just I'm getting rid of, I did throw away so much of my things at that point. And then we had a basement flood a year or two ago, and we had to get rid of a ton of stuff that way too, so it's made me more keen to be what do we actually need? What do we actually need here? But I think the reality is when you get down to it, because I've read a bunch about this, I've watched a lot of YouTube videos and stuff. When it comes down to it, it really is just, it's an emotional thing when it gets down to it, right? You can have all the fun sort of phrases and aphorisms and all that about what you should do with your stuff and what it means to be a minimalist and all that, how to get rid of things. But when it comes down to it, when you pick up that, AD&D, 3.5 edition book and you remember that I loved playing this game with these specific friends, if you have that emotional connection, that's hard to get rid of, right? It just is hard to get rid of, right? I'm sure 50% of your collection, if you went through that does it spark joy exercise, you quickly be able to get rid of it, right? But that also just takes a lot to do that, and you're busy, you're working, you've got kids, you've got other stuff happening with this relative, you've got there's all this stuff, so the thought of spending hours a day for the next month just holding stuff and trying to decide if it sparks joy or not, that is that's a daunting task, and I don't think you are wrong to feel that's daunting either.
At the same time we were going through this happened at about the same time that, do you remember a little earlier this summer, Sony announced they were going to stop producing physical editions of their video games?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, it's like a hammer blow to this is dumb, but that was an emotional piece of news.
We
are destroying this legacy of computer games. So that got me thinking, because next to my collection of TTRPGs that I never get rid of are some boxes of video games that I have not gotten rid of. And this goes back. So one of the things we salvaged out of this house, for example, was my wife's copy of Infocom's Moon Mist.
Nice.
Right. We found a little box in it. It was oh, hey, it's your Infocom games you played when you were a kid. So I have some boxes full of stuff like that. I've got a box that has some Infocom games in it. I've got a box that has, my Diablo 1 CD in it, right? Yeah. And like just all that stuff. And do you remember maybe, I don't know, whenever GOG or GOG came out selling like old games, you could digitally purchase old games. I started buying everything that they released essentially, because everything had this like nostalgic appeal. Oh my gosh, they're releasing, like, I can buy a digital copy of Baldur's Gate 1. I can buy a digital copy of whatever, System Shock 2. All these games that I played when I was a kid. And just so going through this relative's house and hearing this news about like video game, physical copies of video games might no longer be a thing you can like keep and hold on to, it just got me thinking, like, what am I doing with these boxes of like video game CDs from like the 90s? Right? I love a lot of those games. If you were like, Andy, what are your favorite video games of all time? I would be like, oh, Wasteland for the Commodore 64.
Yeah.
System Shock 2 from like 1998. You know, I would say all these epic things. But do you know how many times I've pulled those physical discs out and played them? The answer is zero.
Yeah.
Because to play Wasteland on my Commodore 64, I have a Commodore 64 that like last time I turned it on, I think I burned out all the capacitors because I didn't like check it beforehand.
Yeah.
None of my, I've got like a pristine Diablo 1 and its Hellfire expansion pack CD down in my basement. But do you know how many computers in my house have disk drives? Like, I had to buy a disk drive last year to like when I wanted to start making a Plex server, and I realized like I don't have any way to even access this stuff.
Yeah.
So that's when I started thinking, like, the value of these things is not that I'm ever actually going to play them again. I'm never going to play Diablo 1 again.
Yeah.
If I ever really wanted to, I could buy a copy online, like a digital copy. I would play it for 3 minutes and be like, yeah, it doesn't hold up. Like, and I would uninstall it and never touch it again. I mean, I'm not belittling, but like, I have enormous emotional attachment around like Hexen and Duke Nukem and Quake and Diablo 1. But that connection doesn't, like, and I like to think that that connection is like somehow embodied by the physical disc I have of Quake in my basement, which I do have. But the reality is I'm never, the memory of it like doesn't depend on that that physical disc. And if that's the case, like, what am I doing with this physical disc, right?
Yeah.
So sorry for the long aside in the video games, but it like, but it's similar to like TTRPGs. I have like a ton of like second edition AD&D stuff that I played the heck out of, and it has so many memories from like high school and all those like formative years of like being a teenager. And you know what? I'm like basically never going to open one of those books again. And if I did, I would honestly, before I trudged into my basement to try to find the box that like my second edition Mazteca source book is in, I'd probably just go to DriveThruRPG and buy it for like $6.
Yeah.
And like use the like PDF copy. So, I mean, sorry about the long rant, but like, I feel like this summer has shaken my belief that like I have these strong emotional and nostalgic ties to stuff, but my belief has been shaken that those ties depend at all on the physical object.
Yes.
So, yeah. All right. I'm going to stop talking for a minute. What do you think about all that?
No, I mean, that's good. I mean, yeah, it's like, I think video games is a really, really good thing to look at in this, right? Because like it is trivially easy to find like a bit for bit reproduction of basically any game, right? Because there are already historians, there are already archivists who have gone through, and you know, they have copies of this. Like, if you really wanted to, if playing Diablo 1 from the disc was something you really needed to do in 20 years, like, there's someone out there who has a way for you to do that.
Yeah.
Right. I'm currently trying to piece together a little retro video game nook in our basement right now. And so like that has involved hanging out on various like Facebook groups that think about and talk about and collect CRTs and CRT televisions.
Yep.
And it is hilarious to me, and it's something that I think even like the community kind of understands too, like how many of those posts are just obsessed with like the technical details of the TV and like the setup and like, you know, getting new capacitors on it and like, you know, making sure that like the color reproduction is absolutely right, and how a few of those posts are related to actually playing games. Right. Like it's like the acquisition versus the actual like use of the thing is like just, they're different hobbies entirely. Right. Like, and I think like for you, I'm going to wager a guess, like the collection part of it is an essential part of like the hobby part of it. Like you have, in a way, you've curated a collection over time. Unfortunately, I'm here to tell you that like your curation of that collection is not valuable to any museum, right? It's not valuable to a museum. Like there is a fixed monetary value you could put on it. You could recreate it at any moment with, probably 1,000 clicks, but like many clicks on a different website. Like, there, you know, like you mentioned, you could just get PDFs of so many of these things if you really needed them at the drop of a hat and all that. Right. So it's like, someone is already archiving it. So it's not like you need to have, you know, like all the AD&D stuff is already, you know, in PDFs like that. Like what's not in there is going to be any of the stuff that's like, you know, if you have your character sheets that your friends and you, you know, like that sort of stuff is like, absolutely. I think like keep that or take a picture of it, archive it in whatever way makes sense to you.
Yeah.
But yeah, but for the stuff that's like, you know, it's your copy, you know, your old AD&D modules, it's like, you know, and you're never going to play them again. Like you know where to find them if you need to, like let someone else do the warehouse for you. Right.
Yeah.
Send them off to Noble Knight, you know, give them to, you know, some other nerd who is going to use them. Right. You know, like put them on the swap table, you know, roll for Topicon, like, whatever, you know, you need to do like to feel like it's not, you know, not a waste or whatever, but it's like, yeah, but it's, you know, it's not serving anyone to have it in the basement. And like you mentioned, at some point it's going to get tossed, whether that's by your kids or their kids.
Yeah.
Like it's all just going to go in a dumpster at some point. Right. So if you want to get some value out of it, yeah, sell it to someone. If not, you could, you know, burn it. Like if you want to have some sort of like, you know, like ceremony surrounding it too. But like, yeah, like that's like the dispassionate look at it too. But like, it is also just hard, right? Like there are definitely books on my shelf that I'm like, I should get rid of this. But every time I pick it up, I'm like, I don't quite want to get rid of it. You know, I put it back. But I will say, I don't know if there's anything I've gotten rid of that I like truly regret. Right. It's like, I think about this often. Like, you know, I've got a couple of, and I know we've talked about this on the podcast, I've got a few video games that are like, they're like collector's items, right? Like legitimately collector's items.
Yeah.
And I have offered it to actual museums that like collect video games. They're like, no, we're not interested. We already have a copy.
Yeah.
And it's like, that is a very sobering thing. It's like, I have this thing that is like, it's valuable if I sell it on eBay. I know there's not a lot of these. I've contacted the people that like, that would want it. And I, you know, told them like, I will just give it to you. You know, you just, you know, say the word and they don't want it. It's like, okay, well, if all those things are true, I'm never going to play this thing. Like, why am I holding on to it?
Yeah.
Right? Like that is, I think that's like an emotional thing, right? Cause like at the end of the day, you're going to die. And like when you are dying, you don't get to take it with you. Right. So it's like, and whatever you believe spiritually, like what happens to you after the fact, you're either annihilated and you don't care about your stuff anymore, or you've ascended to heaven and you don't care about your stuff anymore. Like there's no like afterlife in which you actually care about your stuff.
Yeah.
Like when it comes down to it.
I don't know. Right? What if, like, you get to heaven and you're like, oh my goodness, like why? Why did I get rid of like my second edition AD&D Birthright collection?
Yes, right. Yes, yeah. You get up there and they're like, wait, did you get buried with, you know, like the, you know, module T1? We don't have that.
That's
one
right. Yet. Like, you can't play it up here unless you died with it in your casket.
Yeah, like in your inventory, right? It's just like that just isn't like, right. So it's like, you know, and your kids aren't going to have the same emotional connection either. So it's just like, you can spin this out logically, right? And I think like the logical way to approach this, if you really wanted to get rid of your stuff, is just send it all to Noble Knight. They will give you a check for a certain amount of money, or, you know, try to sell it locally to get a little bit more money. But like, just, you know, do that, and then you've got a bunch of bare shelves. You can put, you know, potted plants on there, or, you know, fill it up with other books or whatever, or, you know, get some space back, you move into a smaller house, like whatever you want to do. Like that's the logical way to do it. But like, I don't know, like there's also like I probably will never get rid of my fifth edition starter set. Like, right. Like that's just going to be something I will drag around with me forever, because it has such like an emotional core to it for me. Yeah. And I think that's okay. Right. like, yeah. you know, you mentioned golf. I always think about golf, like people buy and keep golf clubs. And like, that seems ridiculous to me, but it's, you know,
yeah,
everybody's got
somewhere
their
there's a golf podcast where someone is having the same existential crisis, by the way, like what do I
oh,
do
yeah, about
my
about
golf
clubs or about, yeah. yeah. Or about yeah. a golf ball. Like, I don't know, like golf balls or golf tees or like, I don't know, matchbooks yeah. from, you know, whatever. Right. Like there's all sorts of things that we put like weight yes. into.
When we were going through this house this summer, you know, clearing out my relative stuff, there's a lot of stuff that was really, really painful to say no to, right? Yeah. So here's an example. You come across a relative's like yearbooks from mm-hmm. like the 1950s. This is like a person you love. This is like an artifact of history. There's their picture. They look hilariously awesome, right? In their 1950s, like student photo. Here's the page of the student club they were in. Isn't that awesome? And yet, if you say yes to all that stuff, you end up keeping everything that's in the house, right? Yes. Because yep. everything that's in the house has that same tug of like, well, but this is the thing he had when this, or like, here's his diploma or his, you know, whatever. And what I realized is like, I think if we just took a photo of the page with this picture, like what's the value? What do you want to do with this? What you want to do with it is like pull up a picture and be reminded of how fun this person is and how much you love them and how special they are. And then maybe you have some fun particular memory about this thing. You don't need to be holding the yearbook in your hand, right? You just need like the prompt. The reminder of like, it wasn't that person special. Mm-hmm. And to me, you know, that's easy to say and harder to do when I'm actually looking at my stuff from like literal junior high, right? That has like the weight, not only of memory, but decades of nostalgia built onto it that has mm-hmm. given it like this heavy presence in my mind, this heavy weight. But like at the end of the day, you know, like what if all I need to do to get all of the joy I need out of this is to see a photo of like a character mm-hmm. sheet, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Do I need this like box set for that? No, I actually just need the character sheet that has my friend's character in his handwriting that makes me remember all the fun stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, no, it's absolutely true. Yeah. I mean, that is like another thing that minimalists will often talk about, right? It's just like, yeah, take a picture of anything. You know, like, and you can just have a digital picture of it, or you can print them out if you want to, right? Like, yeah. You could probably condense the vast majority of the stuff that you actually care about from your collection down to like a small photo book,
yeah.
Right? If it came down to it, or yep. you know, or a thumb drive or whatever. Although, you know, if you're thinking about archiving
yeah.
for a long time, maybe print those guys out. But
yes,
yeah, it is, yeah, and like that is, I think that's a noble thing to try to do, right? It's like, yeah, just try to distill it. Like, you know, like you mentioned like yearbooks, and I'm like, you know, I've got my yearbooks going back to junior high. Like, I don't want them. My kids are never going to look at them.
Yeah.
You know, other than like what you said, they might like flip through and try to see dad's picture.
In my experience, my kids will flip through them only for the purpose of making fun of whatever they find in there. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There will be, you know, definitely, you know, that part of it too. Yeah, but it's just, I don't know. It's like, there's another book that I've read. It's called Die with Zero. Hmm. It's a little like, I don't know. I've got some quibbles with it, but I think it's generally good. Like the whole idea is that like you have these seasons in life where you can do certain things. If you want to climb, you know, whatever, some mountain, something like that, your window for that is probably quickly, you know, closing on that. Like you will not be able to do that in your 60s or your 70s.
Yeah.
Most likely, right? So like if you want to do that, like, you know, if you want to both climb a mountain and also, you know, go to the opera a bunch of times, like maybe climb the mountain in your 30s and then go to the opera in your 60s.
Hmm.
Right? Like, but it also really pushes the idea of really trying to use your money and your resources and stuff to build memories, right? And I think for you, just because, you know, we've done this podcast for now, this is our 200th episode, right? So I think I can say this pretty
confidently. Oh my goodness, it is. Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. At least this is our number 200th. I don't know. Like, I'm sure we've got like some.
It somehow fits. We were, that our 200th episode would be a dour
yes. like,
reflection on the meaninglessness of everything yes, and the inevitability yeah. of death. But yes, go
yeah,
ahead.
Yeah. That, I mean, that all makes sense. Focusing on experiences. And so I think like with you, I know that the core reason why these hobbies are like part of you, right? Like your gaming hobbies and all this stuff is like, it's not because you really like acquiring stuff, although maybe it's part of that. But like, for the most part, like you like doing this because you like being able to share it with other people. Yeah. Right? Like I know this about you, even when it comes to video games, even if you're playing a single player game, you love talking to other people about what that experience is and sharing that and like trying to urge them to like to play it, right? Like we've we've been part of various groups over the years about like, you know, trying to get other people to play certain yeah. games and stuff. And like same thing with tabletop games, like when you are buying stuff, I'm sure there's an element of like completionism there too, but like there's also just that like I really want to play this, right? Like there's something about this that I want. The result I want out of this thing is to play this at the table with my friends, with my family, you know, play it at a convention, whatever, right? There's like all the stuff that goes into it, which is you playing it. And I would wager that if someone came in the middle of the night, took all of your role-playing, you know, game books and stuff, you'd replace some of them, but the ones you'd replace would be the ones that are like, oh, I played this campaign with these friends.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, yeah. that those would be the ones that you'd replace first. It would not be the like, oh my goodness, I really need to get my like whatever, my White Wolf collection like complete again.
Right.
It would be like it'd all be focused on like, oh, like I really enjoyed playing that game. But at the same time, if you didn't get to replace them for whatever reason, you know, it's like you would still have all those memories. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly, no one can take that away from you. Yep. Ever. Yeah. And then I think, yeah, going forward, games that you'd buy, you'd probably play more likely too, because you don't have all this other cruft behind you of like
yeah.
this huge list of like, oh, there's all these other games I want to play, when, you know, when it's like really just like the result you want is to like go hang out with your friends to play a game. It's like yeah. whatever game that is going to be great.
Well, that's a great note to end on. You know, I will say, you know, it is funny now that I am like kind of old, like I can look back at phases of my life and see like, oh yeah, in that phase of my life, I did want to collect a lot of stuff. It was important to me to own every stupid freaking Hunter the Reckoning source book.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And like, but now I'm like, I hate having this stuff. Like I hate the burden that this physical garbage has. You know, it's not garbage, but this physical stuff has, that's hard, that I am nonetheless having a hard time getting rid of. So, mm-hmm. I appreciate your thoughts. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I've got one challenge to you, if you'd be up for it. Is there a game system that you have more than one book of that you are like 1,000% sure you're never going to read or reference or play? Like, can you like what's the one like that comes off the top of your head when you're thinking?
Well,
about it? for me,
the
it's
correct Fate. Way to word that would be, Andy, do you have more than yeah. 15 game yes, systems?
Yeah. I'm just looking for one right now. Yeah.
I don't think ever in my life I will actually play AD&D second edition again.
Okay.
Having said that, now I'm like, wow, it would be kind of cool to set up a campaign to a second edition AD&D campaign.
I mean, this is the melody yeah. that we are all
right.
My recommendation, you can take this or leave this, and maybe I'll just like generally for people who are listening, if you're also doing this exercise in your head, just don't think about it too hard today. Take a 10-minute break, send an email to Noble Knight and say with a picture that says, I've got these ones, what will you give me for them? Yeah. Or, you know, box them up and bring them to, you know, the swap table at Roll for Topic Con or something like that. Yeah. Like just like do it, right? And then like see what they say. And I bet you like taking that first step, you'll be like, oh yeah, like this is not a big deal to get rid of. Or there might be some sort of emotional tug that shows up and like, yeah, then listen to that
by yeah. means and explore so it. But like, yeah, I just, will do that. Do it.
Yeah.
I will do that. And feel free to ask me in an episode or two how yeah. that turned out. So I'll take a baby step. So hey, I appreciate talking to you about this. And I appreciate what's funny when you get older is like that there's this like you start to acquire this like shame for like stuff that you mm-hmm. have that you don't need, you know, stuff yeah. that you would have boasted about, like check out my bookshelf that's like full of like White Wolf source books. Now it's like, oh my gosh, how I have guests coming over, how can I like hide that I, you know, yeah. so like I need to get out of this is helpful. And maybe if you're listening, if you've like gone through this, or maybe you're listening to this and you were like, why would you ever get rid of your AD&D second edition?
Yeah,
books?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, we'd like to hear from you. So, yes, but we also need to wrap up this episode. So.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, cool. Well, thank you for bringing that topic. Hopefully I didn't moralize too much at you, but this is definitely something
I need some moralization from people that understand, you know what I mean? Not from people that are like going to sneer at like, how did you wind up with all of these White Wolf Slurps books? But like someone who understands, like there's emotions involved and that makes doing the obviously correct thing actually kind of difficult, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
All right.
Cool. All right. Well, that does it for us. Thanks everybody for listening. Yeah. Please reach out. I mean, I think this is this is our turn of the episode. We love doing this. You know, please reach out. Let us know if you listen. And then, yeah, if you have any kind of advice for either of us, tell us we're idiots or, you know, here's what Andy really needs to do.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. If you want more, Andy in your life, you can go catch him on Zombie Streams with, Tim and John Corey, do that podcast together. Otherwise, that does it for us. I've been Chris Salzman.
I've been Andy Rao.
Remember, if your players are having fun, you're a great GM.